It's Tuesday, June 5th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, everyone, got a great show for you lined up today. Got a lot of stuff to cover. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How's everyone? How are you doing? Did you have a great day back to work? I know that I did. It was totally productive. Every one of those days where just everything, even if it was a Monday, everything was click, 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 click. It just fell in place. It was perfect. Didn't seem like any downtime whatsoever. I like it when days go like that. And I hope you had a good first day back to work, and I hope you have a great week the rest of the week. And, of course, all of you that are long-term subscribers to the show, hey, thanks for being part of the Ohana, being part of the family here. I definitely do appreciate it. I appreciate all your feedback and commentary. It definitely helps to keep the old spirits and motivation up in doing the show. And I think, what are we at now? I think we're 270-something, so we're getting right along there. We're going to be heading towards 300 here pretty soon. So anyway, got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. And for those of you checking out the show for the very first time, hey, thanks for being here. And of course, stay subscribed. Definitely get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content there. Of course, check out the podcast link as well for our archive podcast and sign up for the newsletter. That's available via the second column of the website. You can see a little thing up there that says newsletter. Subscribe to that, and you'll get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. Well, I tell you, it's been an interesting couple of days. It really, really has. I have a lot of stuff going on here, a lot of stuff going on at work, a lot of stuff going on at Raw Voice, so I'm going to cover some of that here a little bit. But one thing I have been playing around with, and something I actually, it's actually a little bit time-consuming, so I'm going to have to be real careful in actually getting too wrapped around the fence post with it, is the new link blog that I've been playing with over at Google. And if you go to geeknewscentral.com, you'll see on the website it says important links. I've got it bolded. It says Todd's Google link blog. And definitely go over to that, click on it, subscribe to the RSS feed, and let me know in about a week, maybe a week or 10 days, let me know if the content that I'm tagging over there for you, and essentially what I'm doing is today, believe it or not, I reviewed 2,600 articles. Now, a lot of them were duplicates, but took me about, I would say probably an hour to get through those. And I did it when I first woke up this morning and sat down here and was reading email, and it was kind of quickly looking through them. So let me know what you think about some of the stuff I've tagged over there. Don't think I'll be able to do that many every day, but as I refine my list, excuse me, on Google, I think it'll get better over time. But anyway, what else is going on? Well, you know, my kids, they just amaze me, especially my 3-year-old. He is quite the rambunctious little devil. Today he was in my office this evening, and I got the office completely cleaned up. I made some rearranged furniture. Things are where I can get to now. It's organized a lot better. So he was over here wanting to play with iPhoto on the Mac. So I let him play with that for a little bit. He turns the webcam on and looks in it and switches the motif and takes some pictures, and he has a good time. But on his way out, he got it in his mind that he wanted to ring a bell that was in this room. And he was about, a foot too short from reaching the little string that's attached to it. And what I've got here is kind of like a small ship's bell. It was given to me as a gift a couple of years ago. And my kids, every once in a while, my older ones, when they go by that, they'll hit that ding-ding, they'll ding it on the way out. It's kind of It's kind of silly, but, you know, he wanted to ding ding the bell on the way out. So he's looking, and he grabs a hold of the door handle. He tries to lift himself up. I mean, he's doing everything he can to get to that string to ring the bell. And I'm just kind of watching him there. And he turns around, looking at me. Lift me up, lift me up. I said, no, you figure it out. And he opened the door, and there, lo and behold, was a steel case that I have that I use for travel with. It protects everything that I have in there. It's basically it's a hardened shelled case, and he eyed that and he said, I could hear him. He actually goes, He grabbed it. He grabbed it. It's pretty heavy. It's pretty full. And he pulled that into the room, stepped on it, and ding, ding, that bell twice. And he got down. He turned around and smiled at me. He said, yep, I did it. So, yeah, the kids are pretty funny at times. But what have we got going on in the podcasting space? Boy, oh, boy, just a whole bunch of stuff. Working on PodShack sponsors for the Podcast and New Media Expo. Looking for some major, major sponsors over there. If you have a company that is going to want to get some major exposure, we're going to have an event that's going to be very similar to Bloghouse that was at the Consumer Electronics Show. Now, if you go and do a search for Bloghouse and just think about that type of a motif at PME for PodShack, we do need a couple of headline sponsors over there for that. So we're on the hunt. We appreciate anyone that, actually, I will pay a finder's fee. If someone brings us a sponsor for a single day event for the Pod Shack, I'll give you a 10% finder's fee. And that could be a nice, that could pay for your trip to PME. So help us out there, okay? Podcast awards. We're all ramped up. Looks like we're ready to go on July 1st. Still trying to close a few sponsorship deals on that site as well. But I think we've got enough sponsorship right now to cover the trophies, which is the most important thing, and to pay for the traffic and everything for the site. So we're looking forward to that kicking off here in a couple of weeks over at podcastawards.com. Going to have some new graphics up the site real soon. So people will be able to start running advertisements on their own blogs and so forth. We've been really working hard ever since our New York trip to decide what we're going to do the rest of the year. And as I had went out there and talked to media vendors and some other people on podcast business, and you know, it was a real productive trip. Angelo and I were out there together, and I asked Angelo while we were out there, so, you know, what's it going to take to bring you on full time? And he sat down and did the math with his wife and gave me a number that was acceptable that we could handle. And Angelo put in his 2-week notice this morning. So 2 weeks from actually 2 weeks from Friday, a 2 weeks from now, he is going to be full time with Raw Voice. I'm totally ecstatic. So our primary lead developer at Raw Voice is going to be essentially available to me 40, 50, 60, 100, 200, I don't know how many ever hours he can handle a week. And we have a lot of stuff for him to do. So I'm really, really excited about him being dedicated in coding. So I'm looking forward to having Angelo come on board on that. We're going to be having a Blueberry Podcaster community meetup this coming Thursday. And I'll have information up that on the blog at blueberry.com. But it's going to go down at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So if you're a podcaster, we'll definitely want to hook up with the community members. That's going to be open to the public as well. We're going to have that on TalkShoe. Have a link to that. So we hope all of you would join us for that event. And, you know, if you're a listener, come on out too. Hang out. We're going to be talking about the community and what we can do to make it better. Rob, our marketing guy over at Raw Voice, he's been full-time now for about a month, so I've got Rob tasked up for the rest of the week doing a whole bunch of stuff, and he's going to continue to do media meetings in New York for us. So lots of exciting stuff going on the podcasting space, so I'm really, really happy about that. It was kind of a somber weekend around here. My dad's birthday is on June 2nd. My birthday follows a couple of days later. And so, you know, as is, you know, usually on his birthday, I would call and wish him a happy birthday. So, you know, what do? You know, so I called my mom and talked to her, and I'm like, you know, this is kind of weird, you know, having a first birthday without dad around. And she and I talked about it for a little bit. She says, yeah, it was kind of weird. And I said, I don't know if I need to, should call you and, you know, to talk to you. You know, it's just, what do you do? What's the protocol? I guess there is no protocol, but he was definitely in our thoughts and prayers on Saturday. All right, we did have a good roundtable Saturday morning, and actually Saturday morning my time, and that went down at 4 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It was great. We had a great event, and it was kind of cool. What I did was I had the GoToMeeting session up, so I think we had around 20 people in the GoToMeeting room. And then I had the TalkCast loaded, and we had a number of people in there. Some of them weren't actually in the GoToMeeting session. And then I had the Ustream live video stream running, and we had a group of people over there, and I had all of it patched so everyone could hear the video and interact. It was pretty fun. It really, really was. I think in total we probably reached about 40 people on the live event. And Annie McCaskey did a presentation. I did a couple on some sites, and Adrian Bacon did as well. And if you're a Mac user, you're definitely going to want to check out what Adrian had to present. He was showing how to create a video with, I'm going to blow it here. Let me go over to the website and tell you exactly what he talked about. Isn't that terrible? He talked about how to create a video presentation with Keynote. So he walked you through the process on that. We talked about Plig, we talked about Juice, talked about Widgetbox, we talked about Screencast-O-Matic. So the live video of that, or the video recording, is up online at techpodcast.com/blog. Definitely check out the video. You can download to your iPod if you'd like as well, for those of you who have video iPods. So that's available, but we do have a flash version of that up on the website which is full resolution, which you can see everything. And I want to, of course, thank GoToMeeting for being the sponsor of that event. And as always, these days, whether you're in business or simply want to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail sometimes just isn't enough. And as we did on that show on Saturday, we hand off to different presenters. We did live. We actually run video strips. It was a whole bunch of stuff we did with the application. Just goes to show you how far web conferencing has come and how this solution is the perfect solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with associates, family, and, of course, our friends at Tech Podcast. So, you know, the ability to host those meetings online really allows us to do what we do best. And the thing I like the best about the application is unlimited meetings for one flat rate. So you can try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/Tech Podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/Tech Podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, what else do I have on my little list here of things to talk about? I think I've got through everything, and just about time too. We need to get into the content. If you are looking to make a mobile website, and if you're familiar with what's going on there, .mobi domains, when you set up a domain name that ends in .mobi, you actually have to have the website set up in a way that actually will be viewable on a mobile device. So if you want to create your mobile website using Website Tonight from GoDaddy.com, you can easily create websites that are formatted specifically for wireless phones and PDAs, making them easy to load and navigate for your favorite mobile device. And when you add the .mobi domains, they're, of course, now available, of course. Check that out. That great, you know, being able to create a mobile website on the fly is really, really cool. And when you get to that checkout counter, enter the code TODD when you check out and save an additional 10% on your order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Geek5 is another code, 15% off when you have an order of $20 or more. Or for hosting accounts, Pod58 is a real popular promo code as well right now. But one thing of warning, if you buy a .mobi domain name, and you point it at your regular .com website, and it does not have the formatting to have that content be able to be viewable on a mobile phone, the .mobi people that actually monitor those domains, they can actually take your domain away from you. And there are some specifics about that. So, you know, if you do register a .mobi domain, make sure that you comply with the .mobi requirements. One word of, a comment here before I get into the content is I had a plethora of emails coming in talking about how Flash videos have been able to be viewed on PCs standalone for a long, long time. I thought I'd better say that up front, because when we get to the comments at the end of the show, boy, you guys let me have it. And it's nice. It's nice when I get corrected, and keep on doing it, please. So I definitely appreciate the getting me straight on story here. So let's get into this stuff. Okay, the first article I've got tonight for you is on Wired. It's entitled "Desperate Botnet Battlers Call for an Internet Driver's License." Now, obviously, the headline was to get someone's attention and say, "Whoa, what are they talking about? Are they crazy?" And essentially what happened was, is at a super secretive conference last week, the security folks that are battling on the internet, all these botnets and stuff, met together to have a frank discussion on what they could do to counter e-crime and these, you know, never-ending botnets that are being picked up and unsecure computers and the whole nine yards. And there's a quote here that I'd like to read for you. It says, "Millions of consumer PCs are compromised, and those machines can be used to host phishing, scan, and other sites, sniff traffic, and in denial of service attacks." And they say they really have the potential to be a tremendous weapon in the hands of the wrong folks. They represent a significant threat to the United States. Now, I think this is a pretty bold statement. But at the same time, it's very, very true. And the discussion turned into one that finally said that the government's going to have to do something, because with ISPs not being proactive and blocking machines that have been overtaken by bots, and essentially so many machines out there compromised, millions of machines being compromised, the only way that it's going to be able to be handled is with some sort of governmental intervention, some sort of governmental clinics where people can bring their computers. You know, they said it, you know, kind of off the cuff, saying that maybe people need to have a driver's license to be on the internet. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of approaches. Now, they never were able to get to a final solution. But, you know, every time there's a big issue, people say, okay, let's have Uncle Sam do the job, right? Well, you know, why don't these industry people get together with the McAfees, the Symantecs, why don't they all get together with those groups, all these vendors that create security software, and then why don't they get together with Dell, Gateway, Apple, all the different companies that build computers? Bring them together, bring the heads of those groups together, and come up with a plan so that when people buy a computer, and if they don't know anything about the internet, they have the option, which I would hope that people would opt into it, is that they would have some sort of a managed security program within their computers. So, you know, guys like me, and probably many of you, will not need someone to kind of babysit our computers. But at the same time, if there was some sort of a service that was available that could come preloaded on a computer that was built into the price of the computer, that let's say for 5 years or whatever, the life of that PC, so long as the operating system wasn't changed out, would have some sort of managed, back-end managed, automated update system where the virus application got updated. Not only just the definitions, but the engines that drive it and the firewalls were managed, the whole nine yards. You know, you would think they would be able to come together and come up with a solution that over time, as people replace computers, would solve this issue. You know, just include in the price of the computer the stuff that's going to be needed to lock these things down. Now, Microsoft obviously could help out a big bunch here. And all they would have to do is go out and buy one of these companies. And once they bought them, then they would be, don't make them a separate, you know, don't bring them into the Microsoft fold, but make it part of the operating system load that when the machine goes out, it has Norton antivirus loaded on the machine or whatever application or whatever vendor they buy that's, you know, hopefully decent, and make it free on the PC. And, you know, we're going to fix this issue in a big, big hurry, especially if they get their heads together and make this management system robust enough. You don't need the government to do this. Private industry can. These companies have big war chests of money. You know, fix it. They can fix this. You know, and you get the ISPs in at the same time. Make the ISPs say, yep, here are the rogue computers on our network. We're going to shut those machines down, and then we're going to provide a number of technicians to go out and help people get their PCs back online and make that a service available that people would have to pay for. And if they don't do it, guess what? Tough. You can't come on the internet until your machine is fixed. And as soon as they start doing that, they would solve the situation, and it would make it so painful for the botnet people, at least in the United States, that botnets would not be available in this country, or there would not be machines in this country that had that issue. And if it would filter down further, you know, they could be limited to machines in some other countries. So I think this is maybe a good approach. I don't know. What do you all think? And I don't think having the government go do this is the right decision. I think these groups could come to some sort of a, you know, working consensus together. All right, the next article I want to talk about is a link that I found over on Mashable at mashable.com. It's about a new service. It's called Blin, B-L-I-I-N. Blin is a GPS-based live blogging application. It's a plugin. Blin is a live community that lets you share images, audio, text, and video from wherever you are and share it with the world on the Blin Google Map. So if you're at a park or if you're at an event, you make a post. The post doesn't go to your, it may go to your blog, but it also goes to a specific area on the geomap. Kind of cool. It is kind of cool. This is would be great for events and different types of venues. Of course, it would have to be sorted by day and so forth. But very, very interesting concept, that's for sure. All right, up next, you know, the space shuttle is due to launch here June 9th, or I believe as early as June 9th or June. It's due to launch on June 8th, And what's going to happen is on June 9th, some of the shuttle workers are going to be going out on strike. Members of Local 2061, International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, representing 570 employees of the United Space Alliance at the Kennedy Space Center, voted to walk off the job. Now, government officials or NASA officials are saying that this will not affect the Atlantis launch on the evening of June 8th, and that the USA officials said that they would be bringing in other non-union qualified workers to fill in for the striking. You know, this was pretty obvious. They voted to go on strike immediately upon the launch of the, you know, as soon as the day after the shuttle was launched. Sounds like pretty foul play to me. Now, they say they're going to continue with the launch, even with this strike. You know, these people shouldn't be allowed to strike. There should be something in their contract that says, okay, when NASA has a mission window launch, you guys can't strike. The shuttle gets back on the ground. Okay, you can go on strike. But there's something just fundamentally wrong about this. And, you know, I guess that's their right. I'm sure there's people in this audience that belong to a union, and I'm not going to get into a political discussion about unions. But, boy, what a way to put a little pressure on. Yeah. Now, the question will be, will they get a contract before the strike deadline? That's the question. Will this tactic work? All right, Mark Cuban has an article, two articles on here that I think I'm sorry, I can't agree with what he's suggesting. He's talking about measuring simultaneous internet viewers, and that's how advertising should be paid for video advertisements. In other words, if I put a video up on the internet, and at the most that video gets at any one time is, let's say, 1,000 people watching it simultaneously, that's the highest rate that an advertising firm should pay for that video advertisement. Not, and he's discounting completely the aggregated value of having the content up and having views done over time. Now, doesn't he get it? We live in a DVR society where we store it and we watch it later, where we subscribe to something and it gets loaded onto our media devices and we listen the next day. Does he not realize that we're living in a society today where we get what we want on demand and not necessarily at the time that something is being produced? So he is desperately clinging on to the old school mentality that, you know, this should be a, that's how the new model should work. And I'm sorry, it just doesn't work that way. Take, for example, the roundtable video that I put online last night. That roundtable video, over the next 30 days, will get about 1,000 views a day. Now, while that's not a lot, over a month, it'll get about 30,000. And it stays pretty steady. Actually, I get a whole bunch in the beginning, and it tapers off over the month. But at any given moment, what, maybe 3 or 4 people are downloading or watching it at the same time? So would he expect an advertiser to pay based upon 3 or 4 people watching? It just doesn't make no sense from the content creator side. So people are up in arms a little bit on this, and he's talking about streaming video. And again, he also kind of refers to YouTube as well. So I think he's off the mark here on this. I really, really do. It just doesn't work. It works. Hey, it's great for advertisers because they don't have to pay hardly anything. But sorry, Mark. This doesn't work in the new media sense. It really, really doesn't. This is a new website that I have not found before, but I've actually subscribed to at night. It's called Maximum News, Macsimum News. And this article that caught my eye was one by a gentleman by the name of Dennis Sellers. He says a Mac virtualization plan that would kill Windows, Dell. So what he is thinking here is that what he thought would be killer is if the Leopard operating system, which has been delayed until October, which is, I guess, being used to test some secret features, and he is hypothesizing that Leopard is going to be able to run Windows applications natively without Windows. Whoa. Did you hear me say that? He thinks that Leopard is going to be able to run Windows applications natively without Windows. Would that just blow Windows' mind? Would that just take Microsoft and just cut their legs off? Would that just about kill any other major computer manufacturer? That would be the knockout blow that would just, that would send stock prices through the absolute ceiling. Now, I don't know if this is, you know, this is his prediction, but he thinks that this is very, very possible. No need for Windows operating system ever, but you could run any of the applications. He says, what a sweet fantasy that would be. No need for Windows OS. Never happened in a million years, would it? Question mark. But boy, oh boy, think about that for a few minutes. And those of you that are Mac users, you're like, yeah, that's cool. And as a Windows user, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that would be cool. I tell you what, if that happens, call me converted. Because get the best of both worlds, right? You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm doing all my video stuff on my Mac, and You know, I've used all the Windows tools, high-end tools too, and I definitely like the workflow of doing video editing on the Mac. Now, I don't use a lot of the other applications. That's just because I've got a lot of money invested in Windows stuff. But if I could transfer that and run on one PC and run get both sides of the fence, I think Microsoft would, I think they'd lose their minds. Okay, there's an article up on TUAW.com, which is the unofficial Apple weblog. At least that's their byline. And they have an article entitled here, New iPhone Ads, What Mac Ads Should Be. And I'll be honest with you, the ads are pretty cool. It makes you almost want to run out and buy a new iPhone. It is pretty impressive. But the thing I'm going to kind of temper the excitement on this iPhone by an article later in the show. But it is pretty cool what Apple has done with this with the ads for the phone. They've definitely pulled out all the stops and spent a lot of money on the promotion for this. You know, they've spent a lot of money on the company over sales of these. And there's been some articles over the last couple of days that talks about a little bit of uneasiness within Apple itself on this upcoming launch. And, you know, everyone's making all kinds of wild, wild predictions on what the impact of this phone is going to be. I think the true limiting factor is going to be on the network they're on. But we'll talk about some of those network limitations here in a few minutes. Next article up is a very, very cool, heavy science article that was over on scientificblogging.com. And this article is not for the faint at heart. Talks about mysterious radio waves on Titan, and this talks about the Huygens atmosphere structural instrument called HASI, H-A-S-I, which was launched in 2005 that measures electrical conductivity of Titan's atmosphere, and the results of that probe hint at a new way to investigate the subsurface layer of Titan and could provide insight into whether or not Titan has a subsurface ocean. And it essentially talks about some differences in the ELF frequency as the device was making its run-in. So what we'll do is I'll have this linked up in the show notes. And this is, again, this is for you, for those of you that are big time into RF, into wave propagation, into talking about what happens in the ionosphere. This is an article you'll definitely want to read, the rest of you. Just skip it. I'll be honest with you. It's pretty deep, but good article nonetheless. But I thought it would interest some of you. All right, Google Mathematics. Again, this is kind of a cool article, and all of you should know that you can do math on the Google search page. You know, using the Google search box as a calculator, you can put in a number like a. One times two, and it'll tell you the answer's two. But what if you put in 1.7976931 times 10 to the 308th power? What would be the answer? Well, 3 to the 1,023rd power. So they talk about how far the Google calculator goes. And it's primarily tied to the 32-bit double precision floating processing point on the processor of the servers that Google is running on. So, in other words, this is just a kind of a dorky article, comes off the website geekwithlaptop.com. I think some of you will get a kick out of it. Maybe some of you will say, so what? All right, the RIAA has thrown in the towel in the Atlantic versus Anderson prosecution. And this has been a very notorious file-sharing case that has went back and forth. And this disabled gal who was originally sued by the RIAA in 2005 fought them tooth and nail. And up to this point, the RIAA has been very, very reluctant to drop charges or to essentially give up on any case, and this will be the first case where the RIAA had a case dismissed against them with prejudice. So what this is going to result in is in her being able to go after the RIAA for legal fees. This is good news, good news, good news. So I'll have this link up in the show notes. This came off of Ars Technica, and it's a win for us, folks. It really, really is, and hopefully it's another chip away at the RIAA's armor and what they have been doing. Let's just keep our fingers crossed that she gets her legal fees paid, and it's just going to open up some doors, some more issues. There's a great article over on Guy Kawasaki's blog, and he talks about By the Numbers, how he built a Web 2.0 user-generated content citizen journalism long-tail social media site for $12,107.09. And this is pretty interesting here, how he breaks it down. I'm just going to go over real quickly what he invested in this company to get this Web 2.0 company off the ground. He spent $0 for the business plan. He spent $0 for pitching venture capitalist. He spent 7.5 weeks from the time he registered the domain to the site that Trumors, TRUEMORS.com went live. He went He spent $4,500 was the total development cost, and it was done by folks over at Electric Pulp. I'm going to be checking into them. He spent $4,800 on legal fees for the company just in case this thing went big. He spent $399 for a logo. He spent $1,115 on registering domains. He said he should have used GoDaddy and done it a lot cheaper, but he was too stupid and lazy. Boy, Guy, if you go register that many domains again, I got some codes for you. He registered 55 domains. Oh, yeah, he spent way too much money. Probably what it was all variations of the website. So in total, he spent $12,107 to get it launched. He had 3 TechCrunch announcements, which is amazing. That's just totally amazing to get 3. That's just disgusting. It really is. We have yet to get 1 TechCrunch mention, and this site gets 3. Well, I guess your name has to be Guy Kawasaki to get that. He got 261,000 hits on the first day, which is just incredible. He had 14,052 visitors on that first day. He spent $0 on marketing. He did, however, spend 24 years smoozing people, so that kind of explains where he got the write-ups. He had, he had to delete like half the posts that were put up on there, and then he actually got a mention that the site was the worst website ever by the Inquirer. That resulted in another 246,210 page views. I'll be honest with you, any news is good news when it comes to getting traffic to your website. And he says 11 days after the launch, the website had 315,000 hits in Google. And he said, I can't figure out how this can be, but I'm not arguing. He says, 4 lessons he learned is there's no such thing as bad PR. 12,000 goes a very long ways these days. You can work with a team that is 1,000 miles away. Well, boy, we've proved that at Raw Voice. We're all thousands of miles apart from each other. Life is good for entrepreneurs these days. So that's where 12 grand can take you, folks. You can build your own Web 2.0 website. And, of course, it was called the worst website ever launched. So, Maybe you don't want to hire that other firm that built that site for him. All right, there are some whacked out ideas that come out all the time, and this week's issue of The Economist reports of an interesting scheme proposed by a professor who wants to get rid of the Earth's carbon dioxide emissions with using a conveyor system built in the Arctic that apparently he thinks can take advantage of Earth's magnetic field to expel the emissions into outer space. Wow, this one's an interesting one. And I'll just let you all read this, but one thing's for sure, there's a lot of snake oil salesmen out there. There really is. All right, this next article I'm sure you're all going to get a chuckle out of. You know how his dogging Apple for having embedded the account names and emails into these DRM-free files? Well, apparently, this has actually been going on for about 4 years. So if you bought any tracks from Google over the last 4 years, that info's been there all along. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us that that was the case. How many of you know that? I have the link up in the show notes. It talks about how you can look at your music that you've bought in the past to find the information in there that has all that data tied back to you. Apple's also fixed a long-standing AAC MP3 volume bug in iTunes. So what you're going to find now when you're playing your music, when you go from an AAC to an MP3, the volume level is going to be the same. Before, I believe it was with the AACs would actually play, MP3s would play louder in comparison to the AAC files. So I guess they've got that bug worked out. Now, this next article, while I'm not going to go into the details, I'm just going to say three words, or actually four. Larry Flint and $1 million. I guess that's five. I'll link it up in the show notes. When you guys see this, you're going to be like, oh my goodness, what has this world come to? It's just simply amazing. It really, really is. It's not tech news or anything, but I have it linked up in the show notes. All right, next article is a new zero-day bug crop up in IE and Firefox. A noted security researcher has disclosed new zero-day vulnerabilities in Microsoft and Mozilla browser, including a critical flaw in Internet Explorer and a major bug in Firefox. This goes into four specific bugs, one of them being pretty serious for IE, two that are not as critical for Firefox, but it does seem like this guy has found some more bugs here. The Mozilla folks are saying, yep, we are definitely have it in the bug database and we're looking at it. And no word from Microsoft at this point or not. But, you know, be careful out there surfing the Internet because you're not completely safe in either browser. But it still looks on the whole, it looks like Firefox is still a little bit safer browser to be using right now. If you're just out there surfing sites and, you know, not, you know, if you're just going around and looking at multitudes of different sites and sites that you've never seen before, please, please, please use extreme caution because the one Internet Explorer bug essentially allows people to hack your machine just by visiting a website. Terabytes of Mars data has been released to the public, and I'll have a link to these. Over 1,200 new Mars imageries have been released to the Planetary Data System. And the team has also released 1.7 terabytes of data to a user-friendly website. And it's over at arizona.edu. I'll put the full link in the show notes. So if you're looking to, you know, if you've been getting into the files that they've been putting up, these are huge, huge images, 20,000 to 50,000 pixels. And not all of the images have been studied, so who knows? You may be the first to find something if you go through and start digging around and looking at the graphics. I always like just going and looking at random pictures as well. Do you all remember me talking about the FON, F-O-N, the FON Wi-Fi router? I actually finally got that thing set up here. So I have an actual... One thing I thought was pretty cool about this, and let me grab this thing. It has two separate, well, essentially what happens is it's a device about 4x4. It was a Wi-Fi device that I got for free. And it is a standard Wi-Fi router. One side of it has public access. In other words, it has a SSID that it announces as public and an SSID that is locked down. So essentially, you can protect any of your home computers that are on that particular Wi-Fi router by running on the secure side. It segregates it. This is a very, very cool device. You can get them for free. At least you were able to get them for free before. You may have to pay for them now. But they're coming out with a new router that's going to allow you to actually, it's going to give you an extra 10BASE-T port where you can plug a PC into the router while also at the same time maintaining an open Wi-Fi. Now, their goal with this program was to quite literally saturate areas with these free devices where people could essentially get on the device. So if you come into my area where I live and you come by, I've got it tied into my network or actually into one of my broadband services, and you are now able to essentially get in. You have to put create a user account, authenticate, and get out on the internet. Now, I live in an area where it's a limited public traffic area, so I feel pretty comfortable in having it up and running. So I would still use caution if you're in an area that, you're a little bit worried about people doing something illegal on this. But there is a registration system, so there is a certain amount of control. But if you're definitely into making internet available to people, this is definitely a cool device to have. I'll link up the article on Engadget to the new devices that are coming up. Some people are not real happy with this program, but I think it's pretty cool, and I'm actually running the device here. And I'll have to go in and look at the logs and see if anybody's actually hopped on it and used any of the bandwidth through it. SanDisk is bumping its 1.8 and 2.5-inch SSD to 64 gigabytes. Very, very cool. Solid-state drives are the new rage. Price of them are pretty expensive, but here we've got some solid-state drives that are now doubled in capacity from 32 gigs to 64 gigs. And the speed on these things are just huge. You know, they are fast. And so anyway, they consume as about half as much energy as a traditional hard drive. But it appears that these new 64 gig drives are going to be available in, I guess, engineering samples in quarter three, while mass production is scheduled to commence by year's end. It's not going to be too long, folks, before we're going to be able to have these SSDs in our laptops and, essentially not have to worry about, losing drives from banging around our laptops. Gear Live is reporting that there's going to be a new Wi-Fi technology available this summer. The next generation of Wi-Fi products set to be released this summer is referred to as the N series, and it's supposedly about five times faster than the present G version at twice the range. So be looking for some of these devices coming out. And there are some routers and networking cards that have the Draft N version loaded in them, which will be able to be updated once the protocol is solidified. So I'll have a link up there over to Gear Live. This is Andrew, my buddy of mine's website. He's got some great technical videos that he puts up on from time to time. You'll definitely want to check his site out. All right, NASA probe is passing Venus on the way to Mercury. I guess NASA's Messenger probe is making its second pass by Venus on Tuesday. It's going to be helping guide the spacecraft on its surreptitious route to Mercury. And what's interesting about this, they've often used planets to do gravity assist, in other words, speeding up the spacecraft. Well, this is the opposite. They're actually slowing down the spacecraft on this pass to get it lined up to have a successful encounter and get into orbit with Mercury here in 2011. So we're still a ways away from it happening, but this will be the first time once this the spacecraft gets out to Mercury that we've had anything out there in orbit. Now, they're going to turn the sensors on this time, so this will be the first time where there will be two spacecraft essentially in orbit around Venus. And this actual spacecraft is going to come very, very close. It's going to come within 200 miles of the atmosphere. How do you hit that kind of a mark at those distances? I sure hope they've done their math right. But they're going to be able to do some very unique observing, and Venus is in a good position right now to be viewed from Earth as well. So, all right, the find of the day, I think, is how to Twitter from Skype. Excuse me, did you hear me say that? How to Twitter from Skype. And I've set it up. It works better than my IM has. My regular, I think it's through Yahoo or whoever they've got it linked into, where you can Twitter your instant message through, I believe, the Yahoo. Skype works better. All you need to do is you need to add Twitter for Skype as a contact to Skype. And, I have to put the link up in the show notes here because there's some instructions you need to follow to set up your account, and it works great. I Skyped into my Twitter, and I got replies, and things came through faster than what my instant message stuff has. Very, very cool. And a whole bunch of people jumped on this afternoon when I basically Twittered from Skype, said, hey, I'm sending a Twitter from Skype, and I got huge number of responses back from people saying, yeah, that's cool. And then they signed up. So a link will be up in the show notes on that. All right. Talked a little bit earlier about the iPhone. And it appears that AT&T employees who work on operations tell us that the carrier is going to be doing a big bunch of upgrades to its edge network to increase throughput and reduce latency and to help coverage in anticipation of the iPhone. They've been dropping in new T1s around towers and so forth to try to get the speed up. And, you know, this is what's going to kill, really, the iPhone. You know, it's going to have all these cool multimedia capabilities, but it's got this sucky download rate. In most areas, it's at 40 kilobits per second, and as compared to the upgrades that they're doing where they're going to get it to 80K, now they're saying that Edge's real-world max is about 200 kilobits per second. You know, do they realize that on EVDO Rev A on Sprint that I am getting consistently 1,200 kbps downloads? You know, why would you buy a device? Why was Apple so stupid to sign up with AT&T and Singular? I guess Singular is the new AT&T or whatever their new slogan is. Sure, they got a huge network, but guess what? They don't have a broadband package that's worth anything. And they're going to have all this multimedia that's going to be tied to this device? Why did not Apple go to Sprint or Verizon, who have reliable, great EVDO coverage? For goodness sakes, they got EVDO at my mom's house in the country now. It's amazing. It's really sad. It really, really is. I don't understand what they were thinking here. This will be the, you know, how many people in this that listen to this show are on AT&T? How many of you are downloading podcasts? How many of you are downloading media on your phones that are equipped with Edge? I want to hear it. What are you seeing for download speeds? You know, I can push media. I can push media fast on Sprint. I can push media faster than they can download. It's really, really sad. It really, really is. And Apple really has blown it in that case. Can you imagine having an iPhone that was tied to an EVDO network where you could download stuff at the speeds I was just talking about? Hello? I think that'll be the biggest nemesis, biggest, you know, failure of this this iPhone. Gizmodo has a link to a pretty cool product that I think a lot of you will want. It's called the USB Squid Hub, and this is very, 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 very useful. It allows you to plug into a USB port, and then you've got a little octopus cable with four different USB connections dangling, and that can come in very, very handy. It really, really can. Nick Bradbury's been posting a lot of cool stuff that the new FeedDemon 2.5 could do, and I want to thank Nick for adding video viewing capability within FeedDemon. And if nothing else, you need to go to this link on Nick's site and watch the jet-powered car. what fools will do, that's all I can say. So thanks for adding that capability, Nick. And I've been using your news bin capability, too. Been trying it out. Haven't figured out where the RSS feed is yet. A new site that I found, Syntha Site, site.com. It's a new site that allows you to build websites being with Ajax. And it has social collaborative publishing tools. It's got a do-it-yourself superstore of components, widgets, templates to construct with. This is a very interesting website. This site will compete with a couple other websites that I'm familiar with as well. So I'll have the link up to this in the show note. You know, there's been a few times here recently that I've had to put together lengthy emails. And I've been like, you know, I've been at my desk. I've been like, man, it'd just be easier to record an audio file and have it sent, you know. But I haven't been in a position where I could do it. It just really didn't work, you know. I've got a microphone that's built into my PC, so I'd be able to record if I needed to, if I had just, you know. But I just it's too much of a pain. Well, that's where iJot comes into play. Go ahead and go over there. Check this out. You can actually create a video message and send it via email. Very, very cool. I'm going to be using this. I really am. I'm sure some of you are using video mail already, but it's just easier sometimes to just talk, you know, instead of writing a 200-line email that takes an hour. You can just describe it in 5 minutes and be done and send it off. And, you know, the people that get it appreciate it because they don't have to wade through the email and they can listen to this thing while doing other stuff. This site's going to be huge. iJot.com. All right. I think I'm getting close down here to the end of the content today. Let's see how many I've got left. I got a few left. Hilton Hotels. You know, I've been a big fan of Hilton Hotels for a while. And I've actually had a pretty good service in all of them except for one, which I blogged about. But Hilton Hotels are introducing a new program called Stay Connected at Hilton. It's a service bundle in which guests get wireless high-speed internet access and unlimited local and long-distance calling within the continental U.S. for $12.95 a day. And for those of you that don't have e-video service and you had to have paid $9.95 for the broadband anyway within the hotel, the extra $3 is probably worth it. I mean, you know, how many times have, you know, I've been in some hotel rooms recently where my cell phone didn't work. So, you know, I know a lot of people travel with their Vonage phone. They actually plug into the hotel internet. They bring a little router, a little hub with them and use it that way. So this is smart on Hilton's part. And not everyone's going to use it, but I'm sure some will. It's very, very smart. DailyTech.com's got a great article about pay-to-play uncovering online payola. And I'm going to state for the record that Geek News Central does not accept paid product reviews. In other words, if someone sends me a product, they send it as is, and I review as I see fit, and I write the review as I see fit. We don't accept sponsors for, you know, obviously we've got sponsors for this show, but, you know, I don't take money to actually review a product. This goes into tech sites that are being a little naughty in giving more favorable reviews to on products that are actually being paid. In other words, let's say someone sends them a motherboard, and at the same time, they pay for 3 months of advertising on their website. They're getting some better reviews in exchange. You know, it's smart for sites that have basically a separation of church and state. In other words, those that do the writing and those that do the advertising. I think that's a smart way to go. And in setting up ad deals, I think that's very, very smart. It keeps everything on the up and up. But some very interesting findings here. Very disturbing, actually, by the number of sites that were willing to bend, I guess is the best word, to the will of the product provider. Actually pretty sad, to be honest with you. Okay, last article of the day, Space Flight Now. Atlantis astronauts arrive at the Cape for launch. So they've got the schedule here, what's going to be going on, and introducing the crew. So looking forward to the launch here in a few days. All right, we're at 59 minutes. Woo! We've covered a whole bunch of stuff here over the last 45 minutes. I've got some voicemail comments. We'll get into that. And then we've got some email. As always, you can send comments to the show at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Let me go ahead and play this first voicemail.
Todd, this is Paul from Technobabble, TechnoBabbleSHOW.com, and I just wanted to tell you that you were talking in a recent episode about Real Player and said that you thought that this was the first time you could download videos from YouTube. Well, there are several services, including a Firefox extension or two or three, that will allow you to do that. The one that I tend to use the most is KeepVid. That's KeepVid.com. Basically, you can either get a bookmarklet that will, once you're on YouTube, it'll create a link where you can download the video, or you can copy and paste the URL into the KeepVid site. And then once you get it onto your desktop, I just use VideoLAN Client, which is this great little free application that enables you to play all manner of videos. In fact, if I can't play it with VideoLAN Client, it's probably some sort of malware or something in it. I don't know. But just a little tip, and you have a good day. Really enjoy Geek News Central. Okay, bye.
Hey, thanks. And again, you guys fired away right away on me on that. I'm glad. I'm glad you guys got me straight, but I definitely appreciate the call out there and also informing some good tools to use. So I'm going to have to go back through that voicemail again and pull those specific links out for that, but definitely appreciate it. And let's go on to the next voicemail. And he's got a great site, by the way, so make sure you get over there and visit his website as well.
Hi, Todd. This is Bree in D.C.
Hey, Bree.
Microsoft Surface looks very exciting. Of course, Vegas would want it. Take a pics of each of your customers and push it to the picture in your database. Gives you information you have in one or more databases. You could also use it as an ID verification system by reading thumbprints on the Surface.
Oh,
or
yeah.
You could use it as a signature verification system, comparing signatures. Of course, you could use it for the usual mapping function, show your location, bring up food establishments close to your location, or the location where you want food, flowers, etc. delivered, or where you want to go for services, shopping, etc. around where you live. You can also use it as a PC with a visual keyboard or spoken commands. You know, use the keyboard with your, you know, on the Surface. Shoot, put your hand on it. Let it read bio information for health, lie detection, etc., other kinds of data. Breathe on it to get a breakdown of the content of your breath. Or lay on it. Let it get a pics and then 3D modeling of your body for clothes.
Not.
It is a lot like Minority Report. This is really exciting. That's it. Bye.
Hey, Bree. Awesome. Thanks. And Bree's a longtime listener of the show and a frequent contributor and stuff. So we want to thank her for her feedback. And how's things in D.C., Bree? What's going on out there? Anyway, very, very cool. Great ideas. Yeah, you know, and, you know, it could be great for bars, too, because you breathe on the table to see how much, you know, how much you've had to drink. Tells you whether or not you're safe to get in your car or not. And usually you're probably not. But very, very cool ideas there. Yeah. Putting something on, put your hand on there to get a bio read. You know, there's going to be programs that will be, you put a buck in for palm read, get your palms read by the PC. You know, what it's just the possibilities are endless, really. That device is going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, in Vegas, I could see where they're going to be using it in Vegas. I got a good email from my good friend Paul Figiani out in New York, and Paul does great work. He is a master videographer and video editor and does lots of great stuff in audio as well. He says, hey, Todd, this has been in existence for a while. In other words, we're talking about the Flash. He says, go to Apple.com, downloads Mac OS X, iPod, and he's got the link here. And he said, also, if QuickTime is used to stream the web-based Flash video, it can be downloaded right from the browser. So I'll put that link up that Paul provided me in the show notes. And, oh, boy, here's the next one. I got just a stack of stuff from Laxman. He's like, hey, just listen to number 272. I'm going to say something about YouTube downloads. I'm an avid Firefox user. There's been a load of add-ons to download videos from YouTube and similar sites. Here are a few. He's got listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Firefox add-ons. He's also got some other applications, Java Moya, YouTube X, download YouTubeVideos.com, TechCrunch, get your YouTube, just a whole bunch. He says, there are some to name a few. I personally don't think that Reel would ever catch on. I'm sure that I would never use it. And also, I thought that just when talked about downloads. The artists hardly get any money from tracks. They mainly get income from concerts, etc. Not that I support downloading music, but the system is so flawed. All you can do is wait and see. This is my message to you. Love the podcast. Oh, I'll be quiet. He sent me a personal note here. Hey, thanks for the email. Definitely appreciate it. Got an email from Robert. He said, "Hey, Todd, Robert from Tennessee. Listen to your show on my Trio 700P. I did receive your gift basket about 3 weeks ago. Thanks. We no longer have the box with your address, as we want to send you some things from Tennessee. If you could please provide a shipping address so we can send some stuff to you." I'll send that out to you, Robert. I'll get this replied to. There is a address on the blog. There is one. If you go into the reviews section, I believe it in the second column, there's a link on how we get advertisers or people that are looking to send us review gear. I'll just send you an email with it. He says, "The new Palm Folio or Folio or Stupidio or my name for it, the Crapo, would have been a good idea for the Palm maybe 3 or 4 years ago. With laptops being as cheap as they are now and for a limited functionality of this device, I wonder about the continued existence of Palm. Maybe I should try a look at WM devices or a BlackBerry. What a waste of resources. They should have been working on their Linux OS platform for the Trails instead of this thing. Well, enough for now. I enjoy the show. Keep on potting along, Robert." Thanks, Robert. I definitely appreciate that. I got an email from JP. He says, "Hey, I'm busy at work here auditioning some documentary sound samples off freesound.com and listen to what I randomly found." And he links me up to an audio file. "It seems to be exactly what you referenced in your show regarding the store clerks welcoming the patrons. For what it's worth, John in Buffalo." I'll have this this link. You guys can have a little fun with it as well. Now, Sam, my Ohana out of Albuquerque, he says, "Oh my goodness, I'll never install Real Player, not ever. To me, Real Player is on the level of Sony. I'd like to avoid both. You can save flash videos to your hard drive by using Vixie.net, and it'll convert it so you can watch YouTube videos on PC and iPod. By the way, I saw a demo of the Real Player on the D Conference website. It is pretty nice and does not allow the user to download a video that has DRM. But Real Player, seriously, that's like installing adware on my PC. No thanks. Real Player hater." Wow, we've got some opinions on the Real Player. Next email is from Jeff out of Louisville. Said, "Hey, got this today, but it might have come out earlier this week. It doesn't really add many features, but one of the few features it does add is way cool. You can now perform searches for video content on grouper.com and have those searches turned into RSS feeds bearing whatever video content is found. Some of the stuff I've seen it dig up is about 6 months old, though. The other new features of no importance to me are the ability to operate a PS3 over the internet, in addition to over a private network as before, and the oscilloscope display in the music player now changes color. It's no longer tied to the theme color." Thanks, Jeff. I have a link up to the Grouper website. I got an email from one of our Microsoft employee listeners, and I do want to go through this. It says, "Todd, during the show on Friday, you were talking about the high price of Microsoft Surface. Surface is not only currently targeted is not currently targeted toward a household. I did know that. This may change over time as the technology matures, becomes smaller and less expensive. Some of the area Surface is a good fit is the retail store space. Think of the kiosks that retailers have now, which allow you to scan a barcode on a CD to preview the music. See a trailer from a movie on DVD, scan the barcode to get the item's price. With Surface, you'll be able to walk into an electronics store, for example, pick out a few cameras or cell phones or MP3 players, place them on the table, and perform side-by-side comparisons of the products. Or you could possibly see a movie trailer by placing the DVD on Surface and then preview the soundtrack, or you could get brief bios up for the actors in the movie." Very, very cool ideas there. "Surface could also be used in the photo processing area of a store. Go to a photo lab, place your camera on the Surface. Your photos are displayed, and you can shuffle through them, setting the size of one you want prints of. You could do photo retouching, choose the print sizes you want, etc. Another scenario of Surface is for a jukebox. You go into bar, restaurant, pool, hall, arcade, etc. You hear a song playing you like but haven't heard before. This is my problem. This always happens to me. You go over to the Surface jukebox, place your Zune on the Surface. It transmits the song to your Zune for the free 3 plays, or you could drop the Zune on the Surface and buy the song right there. That's a great idea. Or you could drop the Zune on the Surface and have it remind you to purchase a song next time you're in the Zune marketplace. You know what? How many of you listen to music and you say, "What was that song?" Happens to me all the time. He said Surface also could be used as a digital guide. For example, you could go to a theme park. You could have a paper map, but you're not sure of the average wait time for a ride or need to make a reservation at the park restaurant. With Surface placed around areas of the park, you could use it to plan your route, zoom into an area, and see how long a wait time for a particular ride is, see when the next show or whatever is going on, start to make a reservation. Let's say you're staying at the park hotel, and you're deciding to go stay in the park and eat dinner, or wait until you get back to the hotel restaurant. You look at the menus, decide what you'd rather have room service. You decide you want to order room service. Yeah, this is cool. All kinds of stuff for a theme park. He also goes into Surface could be used at disaster response scenarios. Talks about law enforcement as well. Instead of having thick paper flyers in each case, what those could be in a digital form, then you could open a few of case files you think might be related, sort through them digitally, dig into personal backgrounds. Ah, that's interesting. That's truly what Bree was just talking about. It says, really, the ideas are limitless. For the consumer side, imagine you have a pocket PC phone that turns any table into a Surface computer by setting it down on the edge of any table and starting an application. Bill Gates demoed that at CES 2006. Remember that? That is still in the development. Thanks again, and I'll leave his name off the email here, but thanks, Jay, for that. Definitely appreciate that. Got an email from Billy. He says, with DRM free music now available, I merely purchased a copy of Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, and the Infinite Sadness on May 30th. Today, when I looked at the other Smashing Pumpkin titles available, I noticed that they were no longer available as iTunes Plus albums. That included the album that I had purchased the other day. The copy I got was definitely DRM free 256-bit, which leads me to wonder what is going on. I contacted Apple about this, though. Probably will not hear back from them. Could it be that some bands under the various EMI brands don't want their music to be DRM-free? This leads to the question as to the legal status of my DRM-free copy of their album. This can be considered proof that while we, the people who hate digital rights management, may have won a small skirmish but are far from winning the war. Just thought you might be interested, Billy. I think you're right. Who knows? But I think if you got it for DRM-free, or DRM-free, I think you're good to go. You know, if Apple screwed up, oh well. You know, you have a DRM-free copy. You paid for it. All right, this next one is really, really important. I should have talked about this earlier. I've already blog posted about it. Got this email from Trucker Tom. If you haven't been to Trucker Tom's website, go to truckertompodcast.com or truckerphoto.com. But he says, Todd, in the past, I found video rendering times be one of the biggest deterrents to creating video podcasts. I agree completely. He said, rendering is typically a time-consuming process that's fraught with plenty of frustration. I bought an Elgato Turbo 264, which is a hardware-based USB rendering device. I just tried it out for the first time with my Intel MacBook, and I've got to say I'm very impressed. It's warped its way right through rendering a video file that would have normally taken probably 8 to 10 times longer to render without it. With the Turbo 264, I will be able to put out a lot more video podcasts in a short period of time. It's a huge time saver. So I also have the Elgato iTV USB HD tuner, and it also does exactly what they claim it will do and extremely easy to work with. So I can highly recommend both Elgato products. Hope you have a great weekend, Tom. Tom had a great weekend, and I ordered that Elgato Turbo 264. Tom had taken a high-def video clip, processed it on his Mac, took 4 hours to do the rendering. He then did the rendering with the Elgato Turbo 264, 20 minutes. Yep, $99.95. It's on the website at geeknewscentral.com. All right, folks, thank you so much for being with us. geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline. Smack me up. Tell me good stuff, bad stuff, whatever. 619-342-7365, 619-342-7365. Keep these great emails coming. This is almost a show in itself. And I definitely appreciate all the feedback, all the great email comments. And I want to thank all of you for being part of the Ohana. Stay subscribed. I think what we're going to do is I got my hands on some 65th anniversary Pearl Harbor flags that were flown at the Arizona Memorial. Again, these are flags that were flown on the 65th anniversary of Pearl Harbor on December 7th of this year, 65th anniversary. And I've got myself some flags, so we're probably going to run a couple of contests. I'm going to give some of these flags away. And I've got some gear here we're going to give away. Probably start doing that. When are we going to do it? Well, let me look at the date here. We're at the 4th of June, probably around maybe next week. We'll start doing it maybe next week. And I think these will be keepsakes for anyone. We'll get certificates printed with them for your names on them. And these will be keepsakes for a lifetime. And very, very cool flags that were flown on the 65th anniversary. So anyway, I'll get off in here. You all have a great week. Send your comments and your voicemail. Aloha. Take care. Bye-bye.